Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Rachel from the Philadelphia Women's Zoom meeting.
Hi, Rachel.
She said if you know about her.
Hey guys, this is as tall as I want to be, and this is as tall as I am. And if it gets too loud, let me know. Hi, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Rachel.
Hi, Rachel.
Hey guys, thank you. If Shay is on Zoom for us, oh, I see her waving her hands around like a maniac. Thank you for asking me speak. Thank you, Home Group People, for being in service. All right, so I'm an alcoholic named Rachel. I have a sobriety date. It is February 7th of 2013, which actually has nothing to do with me, but I have like many more for like almost two decades before that for like every 2 weeks. So if you need a spare one, you know, let me know. So I have a sponsor. I believe she knows that she's my sponsor. I was taken through the 12 steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and when asked to do so, I have the privilege to take others through. I do want to say that if you listen to my story and you can't relate, you know, to how I feel in recovery or anything about it, or, you know, how I, was taken through the 12 steps, it is not my intention in the least to tell you that the way that you have done it or doing it is wrong. I was told a long time ago that there's lots of different, you know, paths to God and, or I guess getting free. And, I unfortunately can't share anyone else's story, though, if you've heard mine before, it might be more interesting. I don't know, but, maybe not, probably not. Home group. Is this too loud? My mom all constantly yells at me, because my quiet level is like everyone else is loud. Home group, that worked. I am, currently in between physical home groups. I just moved back to my home state of New Jersey. So I guess shut your ears off now if that's your thing. I was originally a last stop girl, then a stepping stones girl, and in the pandemic I found the wonderful women's Zoom based in Philadelphia meeting, and it's honestly seriously been a blessing. I think we're really lucky because there's people all over the place, not just people who suffer from alcoholism, who just felt really lonely and disconnected from like whatever their jam is, you know, in this time. And I just felt really blessed that we had a place to be able to continue to do that and to continue to, you know, show up and be useful. All right. So, very generally, what it was like, what happened, and, what it's like today. I do want to say, I do want to like put out an apology, and I'll definitely try my best. I don't know what your guidelines are, but I have absolutely nothing but respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. Not only did it save my life, but like it's why my mom sleeps at night, like all that stuff. You know, I can show up, be a mom, like all those things. That being said, other things are a part of my story, and I will try my best to keep it in a bottle. If I slip, I apologize. I also have probably the trashiest mouth I've ever met, and I will promise to try my best to keep that in a bottle as well. The other thing is that when I share about my story, I do mention the word God. I can't apologize for that one. I will say that I'm not a religious girl. If you are a religious girl or a religious guy, like, that's awesome. Like, my hat's off to you. That's beautiful. That's not my story, but I just tried for so long. My mom tried, the boyfriend tried, the other boyfriend tried, like, the boyfriends in the other states tried, and, you know, nobody could put Rachel Billows back together again, and they told me to get on my knees and talk to something bigger than me, so finally I did, and here we are. Thanks for letting me share. Alright, so, born and raised, I also make really corny jokes when I'm nervous, so that's where we are. I was born and raised in New Jersey by two parents. They gave me things that I thought for so long were like givens. Like roof over my head, food on my plate, education, things I came to find out later in life were not, you know. But beyond those things, they also gave me things like love. They instilled in me that I was okay exactly as I am. They taught me that you were okay exactly as you are. They were hippies, so they didn't care where you came from, how much money you had, what your sexuality was or your identity or, you know, the color of your skin, like, like, it didn't matter to them. Like, no matter what, you deserved love and respect, both for myself and yourself, and so did I. And that was instilled in me in a very, at a very young age, and still is today. And I share that with you because it obviously has nothing to do with why I couldn't, you know, stop trying to get in strangers' cars on Kensington Avenue to try and get one more drink. With that, I also had some questionable things happen along the way. And I share that. You know, if I want to say that, like, if that's your story as well, and there's something along the way, like, especially in childhood, like, that's happened to you, like, that is absolutely not your fault, right? But the reason I bring it up is because it also has nothing to do with why I'm an alcoholic of the Hope of Sobriety. Has absolutely nothing to do with, just in my own personal story, just for me. I can't tell you what's right for you. For me, it has absolutely nothing to do with why I couldn't stop putting one in me, and I couldn't stop going to go do more once I put it down for a while, you know, and, what then? Like, what, what is the deal? If it isn't the good and it isn't the bad. Very simply, I have an alcohol that can't handle the body. I have a body that can't handle alcohol like other people. You know, my mom has one, at like Christmas. Like, if you bring her over a six pack, she has a drink. My dad, actually, long after they were divorced, he would bring over like a six pack at Christmas. Literally, so when he came back like a month later, there'd be one for him to have. Or like whatever, like it's still there. It may not be good anymore, but it's still there. At Easter, it's still there, you know, cause she picks one up and nothing happens. And it looks very different for me. You know, I tried for a really long time, to do what my mom does. I would go out with girls from work and we would go to the bar and, you know, I'd have one, they'd have one and, maybe they would have one more. Maybe they wouldn't. Maybe they would even get completely trashed, you know, and they'd have to like, take a cab home. Maybe they would even drive home drunk, but they would get home. They would go tuck their kids in bed. They would get up the next day. And they would go to work. And if they didn't go to work the next day, just because they didn't have work scheduled. And I wanted so badly for that to be what I looked like. And it just was not ever, it wasn't my story. I would go and I would have one with you. And then I would maybe have one more. And then 2 weeks later, I'm standing on the street in Camden or Kensington or Little Haiti in Delray Beach, Florida, or wherever I've gone that week to try and run away from myself. And, I'm asking God, like, how the hell did this happen again? Do you know what I mean? Like, I just don't understand. Every intention, you know, and, every intention and just something happens in me, you know, once I pick it up and I get into these really, really, really bad situations over and over and over and over again. And the thing about that is, like, I go until I hit just some sort of brick wall, right? Sorry. But with that, obviously, you know, well, not obviously. They call that the allergy. It's not a craving. My daughter has an allergy. She has an allergy to peanuts. I don't even think she knows what they are. She's 3 years old, but I'm pretty sure she doesn't, you know, have these random thoughts to just go try peanuts anyway, or like obsess over like how she can do peanuts successfully without needing an injection of an EpiPen, you know. I mean, I don't know. I'm not in her 3-year-old brain, but I'm gonna venture to guess. But with mine, there exists that. Every time I run into this brick wall, you know, I remember I used to read in the big book where it said like restless, irritable, and discontent. And I'd be like, oh my God, it's totally me when I'm out there. And, no, that's not what it's talking about. It's talking about when I've hit that brick wall and I put it down. And then perfect. I'll tie one of my war stories in that person into it. I had a gentleman, that we went into the woods together, and I thought, you know, stuff was going to happen, and we were both going to walk out the woods together, and, he had a different idea. He thought that he was going to strangle me to death, and he attempted to, and, in a very real way almost died, and I made it out of those woods, and I had strangle marks on my neck, and my face was, completely just black and blue, and, I would come around, I made it back to AA a week later, because I just got to try a little more, and then, and people are looking at me and they're like, I can hear them whispering like, oh, she's done. Like, look at her. Like, she's done. And at this point I've been in and out for a while, and I would look at myself in the mirror and I'd be like, I'm done. You know, like brick wall in the greatest of senses. And it was a lot of pain and it was a lot of suffering. And I had a very real feeling, you know, when I came out of that I had just barely escaped with my life. But here's what happens. That's just not enough for me. Because I come in and I sit around for a little bit and I'm really tired because I haven't slept in weeks. So I lay down and I get some sleep and I get something to eat. I haven't eaten in weeks or days, whatever, because I can run my life completely into the ground in like a weekend also. So I get some sleep. I get something to eat. I get a job, get lots of those very easily. I just never show up. Again, I get some poor staff to look at me, you know, give me attention, and then very slowly I start to feel what they talk about in the book as restless irritable discontent. And by very slowly, I mean like in a week to 2 week period, my window completely closes, a willingness to do anything, and in that time I start to absolutely, I want to rip my face off. I want to rip my face off. I feel like I've been given the wrong size skin. I'm just crawling around in it. I'm restless. And I absolutely want to rip your face off. And if you're happy, go somewhere else now, please. I'm irritable AF. I'm discontent. I'm here. I want to be there. I'm there. I want to be here. Maybe I should go to a new recovery house. Maybe I should get a new job. Maybe I should break up with him. Maybe I should be with him. Maybe I should be with her. And it's going and it's going and it's going. And I can't sleep. I can't sleep. And about 2 weeks has gone by and my brain is just at its maximum volume. And then one day I look in the mirror and those strangle marks have started to fade a little bit. And that black, oh, I should have said trigger warning. So I apologize with that. Too late now. I'm really sorry. But that black face has started to like heal a little bit and fade a little bit. And I can still remember. I can still remember what happened to me. I can still remember that very real feeling that I was going to die, but I just can't remember it enough. And that is a very specific, example of just like 20 years of my life. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm sure I'm not the only one with that very specific example. I would say like otherwise we wouldn't be here, but this is like a really cool scene. I love this meeting, first of all. I also love it out here. As I was waiting for it to start, I was like, I would go outside, I'd be so spiritual, I would go outside every night and stare at stars. But that's not true, because I said that when I moved to the suburbs, like in April, that I was gonna like sit outside, watch the birds every morning. I think I've done it like 3 times since April, so whatever. That was a sidebar. So here we are, and it's that, over and over and over, and I'm gonna skip back a little bit from like 30 years old to 13 real quick. You'll roll with me. So I've been walking around, right? Because I feel like there's a very important piece that I just completely skipped over of this. Like, I talked about, like, what happens in my body. I talked about, like, what happens in my brain. But like, there's something else that exists in me. Like, there's something that just isn't right. There's something that just isn't right in my soul. And I remember, like, looking back, like, in hindsight, and I still go through this today. And I still go through this today as someone who, like, genuinely, like, my eternal struggle is, like, with myself. But I genuinely love who I am. I genuinely have self-confidence, but then I also don't. So I have to work on it like every day. It's kind of like my alcoholism, but, or is it my alcoholism? So like going back to that in hindsight, like I was a smart kid. I was the pretty kid. I was, you know, people liked me. I was a good kid. People's parents liked me, wanted me to play with their kids. Like, that's what it looked like from the outside. And what it looked like from the inside was very different. Like, I knew at, like, a very early age, like 10 years old, that, like, something wasn't right. And I also knew I was pretty insightful. Because I also knew that I had absolutely no reason to feel that way. Like, I grew up on the mean streets of Morristown, New Jersey, you know. And I knew that I was provided for, and I knew that I was loved. But I also knew that there was something happening inside of me that felt like I was dying more and more every day. And more every day, actually, it felt like I'd been holding my breath, you know, year after year after year. And it was so, so painful. And I remember thinking, like, I remember looking around at, like, other 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, and thinking, like, how do you do this? Like, how do you show up and go to school and go to soccer practice and, like interact with each other? Like, I just didn't, like, it was very clear to me that something, there was some missing piece that, like, you guys knew that I didn't, you know? And come to find out that a lot of you did feel that way, you know, how I thought you were feeling, like, how I felt on the inside wasn't matching up to how you appeared in my perception to be feeling on the outside. That being said, that's also not how it appeared that I was feeling on the outside. You know, I say it a lot that, like, I walked around for so long and I'd be like, hey guys, like, kind of like I am now, but I promise it is real most of the time. Or I'm like, hey guys, and you guys be like, hey Rach, and I would want to just grab you and shake you and be like, why are you waving at me? Because I'm not waving at you. Like, I'm literally drowning. And you just don't even see it, you know? And I walked around and I it just got so uncomfortable. I was like a full-blown eating disorder by like age 10. And I had my first several suicide attempts by age 13. And there's something going on there that's not right. And I knew that. And here's the thing that also happened though. That around age 13, I tried like a couple little things, like, I don't know, like alcohol and stuff, but, I remember, like, it was actually a night kind of like this, a little more humid. I literally remember everything about it. I remember it was the night of eighth grade dance, and I remember the dress I had on, and I remember how my hair was. I remember, this is not me being dramatizing things. I'm the most dramatic person I know, but that's not me dramatizing things. And I remember the way the wind felt on my skin that night, you know? And when I look back, I found photos at some point, and it's like exactly like I remembered it. And that was the night of my very first spiritual experience. We were in the woods outside the eighth grade dance, and someone passed around the green form of alcohol, and I drank it, and nothing happened. And then somewhere in between drinks two and three, I just felt like I exhaled for the first time in 13 years, you know, And that was my longest bout of untreated alcoholism. And just like every bout I had of untreated alcoholism, it ended with a drink. My alcoholism grows to its fullest proportion when I have absolutely nothing in me. Because the drink, for me, is just a symptom. Like, I... Trigger warning. Whatever. Not whatever, but this is going to sound, like, really intense. But, like, it's also my truth, so whatever. I fully concede to my innermost self that, like, if I hadn't found alcohol at the exact moment I had and done it in the exact forms I had for exactly as long as I did until it stopped working, I believe I would have put a gun in my mouth a long time ago. I think someone might be trying to enter the meeting. I'm not sure, though. I believe I would have put a gun in my mouth a long time ago. And I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound like a problem to me. It sounds like alcohol was a solution. It worked. That's why I did it. Like, there's something happening inside of me that's not right. It's male adjusted, you know? And it's just off. And on my own, in my own skin, like, it just doesn't feel right, you know? And again, I could be wrong, like, massively wrong as I'm looking at it now. See, I told you, I'm just drama. And like, my whole life I've sought these things. Very early age until today, when I was like obsessively exercising while I should be working. At work. I work in a hospital, I don't work from home. And I seek something, like the things I do to seek to feel better, like they feel good. Otherwise I would not do them. They work. Otherwise I would not do them. And every single thing I seek to feel that hole inside me that we, you know, the spiritual hole in the soul as we refer to it, every single thing I seek works or I wouldn't do it. But the thing about it is just like every single medication or beauty product, even everything has a shelf life, like so does that, you know, and alcohol works a lot longer than a great Facebook profile picture and then some other chick gets a better one and gets more likes. Do you know what I mean? The only thing I've ever found that worked longer than alcohol was adopting cats. But then you know what? They die too. So there's that. And that's the thing, man. And every single time, like, I end up on that with that same feeling of just absolute, utter, like, despair and emptiness at the same exact time. And alcohol worked for a very, very, very long time to get rid of that, and then one day it just didn't. And at the beginning of my last run, it was like right before Thanksgiving at 2012, and I was at a recovery house, and I got hit by one of those thoughts when I was crawling out of my skin. And here's the thing that's so sneaky about it too, is sometimes it looks like I'm like rocking back and forth, like I want to get high, I want to get drunk, sorry, oops, I tried, I'm really sorry. And I'm not. I am trying my best in that, and I will just continue to try my best, and that's it. So I am working on the needless I'm sorrys. And then sometimes, like, I'm literally sitting at the recovery house or home or wherever, and I'm flipping through the TV, and I'm watching reality TV, and then, like, Real Housewives of OC, and then all of a sudden this thought comes, and then I'm on a train, or I'm on a bus, or I'm just somewhere at some abandoned bar, and I have absolutely no idea how I got there, because this thought came out of nowhere, right? And that's what happened this day. This day, a thought came out of nowhere, and it said, go get one. So I got up, and I listened to it, because I have nothing stopping me from listening to it. So for 2 decades, every time it says go, I go. You know? Every time it says do this, I do this. And I draw these imaginary lines in the sand of these things I won't do. And it tells me, no, we're going to step over that line and do it. So I do. You know? And then I have to draw a new one, and then those lines get, like, less and less and less to even be able to exist or, you know, to come up with things. And it's a very upsetting place to be, especially because there's periods of sobriety in between where I just feel like shit about myself, you know, and what I've done to those around me. So anyway, it tells me to go, so I go. And you know, it's right before Thanksgiving, and I inhale, and then next thing I know, it's February. Because that's what happens. And it's just like the wildest thing. I'm sure someone can relate that, like, while I'm in my active alcoholism, like every single day feels like the third trimester of pregnancy, honestly, which is exactly 728 years. Anyone who has ever been pregnant knows. But all of a sudden, like a decade goes by like that, and I have absolutely no idea what happened. And I'm still here, and I'm still in that same hamster wheel, and I still have literally no idea how to get out, you know? And that was quite honestly the only honest thing I had said for years. I remember my mom picked me up at a bar at like 2 o'clock in the morning in the middle of, you know, God knows where, and she's like, what's wrong with you? Like, why can't you, like, why do you keep doing this? And this is very respectful for the woman who, like, came to a really bad neighborhood to get me at 2 a.m., but I just, like, yelled at her, and I was like, how do you expect me to explain something to you that I don't understand? And that was the truth. It was literally the only honest thing I said anymore. It was, I don't know, you know? And I probably didn't say it often enough, because then all of a sudden I'd get a couple days, I'd get a couple ideas, and then, you know, that story, because I already told it to you, and you already probably lived it, mostly, some of you, at least a lot of you. So I go on this run, and off before this, I feel like it's important to say that, like, I've been doing some work with sponsor. And that work didn't just involve me, like, asking her to be my sponsor, and that was it. You know, and it also didn't involve, I'm a big one with, people who come in there, like, have never done a fist out. Like, I would chase anything that felt good, so I would, like, 459, 459, L, 459, L, 459, L, causing so much harm. It's literally just me sitting down, talking about my, writing about myself, talking about myself, my favorite subjects, going and saying, like, please, I'm sorry, please forgive me, you know, not in his words, and then going on to cause more harm. So, but because I really started doing, like, a couple difficult things, you know, going, I had, like, a warrant for my arrest, took care of that, like, scary things, and, something started to happen to me, and I know that something started to happen to me because when I picked back up, it was horrible. It was horrible. Like, the drink wasn't working anymore. And I saw the same drink working for the people around me, and it just was something was up. Like, did they get something else than I have? You know, it just stopped. And I just couldn't see that, like, this whole thing had been set in motion. Honestly, I believe that when the dude tried to kill me in the woods, that's when it started to be set in motion for me. And that is the book, you know, that is the roadmap of God to my freedom, honestly. I can't call it anything else. And everything looked different. I always had these things that, like, I thought successful use looked like. And I had them this time. It was a place to stay that wasn't abandoned. It was a job that wasn't selling my soul. And it was a boyfriend that would co-sign my use, because I hated myself, you know? So I need somebody to make me feel okay. And I had those things. My mom loves me so much. That was never a question, but the second I would pick up, she's not having it. She'd be like, I'd call her and I'd be like, can I have money? And she'd be like, no. And I'd be like, I have to do these horrible things if you don't give me money. And she'd be like, you're a grown woman. That's your choice. And this time is different. This time she was, driving to Kensington, a couple times a week, taking me out to lunch, bringing cat food for the cats in the alcohol house, because I don't know why alcohol houses always have the cats, but like, I hadn't eaten in forever. When I say take me out to lunch, it was like sitting there waiting for money, but like, I just had to feed the cat, you know. So there, I can serve the cats. So I got it. But she would bring money, and I call it the quarter holder. It's like the inner console thing where you put the cup holder. And it was always filled quarters. Always filled quarters. And I always needed quarters, for laundry. I was doing a lot of laundry for a girl that maybe washed her clothes once from like Thanksgiving to February. There's just a lot of laundry happening, right? So, and the thing about that is that, like, I realized maybe like 6 months sober when I would look and I would get my mom's car, you know, cause she's still driving me around. Couldn't drive. God bless that woman. Jesus Christ. That there was not any quarters in there. And this woman was spending time with her daughter before she died. And we both knew that. And here's the thing about that is that I'll get sober right now. Sorry. I was laying in bed every night in this. I had a mattress on the, I lived in a porch. I rented a porch. I had been told that I misrepresented the porch, sunroom. So I was on the porch in a sunroom, me and the cockroaches and the cats, and every night I would lay there and I had all these things that looked like successful use and I just wanted to die. I felt the exact same way it did every other time. I felt the exact same way it did before I was introduced to alcohol, you know, for that very first time when I had my first spiritual experience. I wanted to die so bad, I didn't, because I knew my mom would be devastated. That's why I wasn't killing myself. And I was terrified, because I knew that at some point it wasn't going to be enough. And that's the thing, man, like, all these things were being set in motion. Like, I'd gotten this job randomly at this restaurant, and I tried to apply at this diner like 17 times when I was sober and never got a job there. And they hired me not sober at all. And there was this woman there from the recovery house, and she would always, like, I was a mess, and she was trying to help me, and, you know, I was like, I'm almost there, I'm not there, and then, and one day I was this, I don't know what's happening, but I can't do this anymore. And it was February 5th of 2013, and I went down to this place called The Last Stop, and I went down there on Preston Avenue, and I went down there with my last good idea, and that was to get pregnant. And it was very quickly pointed out to me by a friend of mine who was in recovery that she went into labor at the same block, same corner that I was purchasing my alcohol. So that probably wasn't going to work, and I felt completely deflated because that was all I had. And I've always been a very smart girl, and I always have an idea, and I always have something up my sleeve. In fact, it was the exact weapon I had used to kill myself for years, because you would try and help me, and I would think, that's not what the big book said, like, okay, huh, like drunk girl, you know? So, trying. So I went there, and this girl was there, and she told me she would pick me up in 2 days, and take me to her home group and in Bucks County. And I went home, and I started drinking immediately, and I drank the next day, you know. But I was really looking forward to it, and I thought maybe she'd get me some coffee, get me something to eat, get me out of the hood for a couple hours. And I had absolutely no idea that that was going to be my sobriety. And February 7th of 2013, I woke up, and I literally just laid in that bed all day. Not by choice. I just didn't have anything left. It felt like the most special place I've ever been in my entire life. Like, I was just drained of all energy. Like, I just stared at that ceiling all day, and I didn't realize it's the most beautiful place I've ever been in my entire life. I'm so blessed to have ever been there. So she picked me up at the corner of Kensington and Tioga. She brought me half a chicken cheesesteak, and she bought me Dunkin' Donuts, and we went up to the suburbs for an hour, you know, and this guy spoke, and I do feel like this is a really good place to say that if you're here in AA because your PO sent you, like, rock on. I'm so glad you're here. If you're here because your parents are going to kick you out, your wife's going to leave you, your husband's going to leave you, like, whatever. Awesome. I'm so glad you're here. And if you're here because you heard that there's hot girls or hot guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, guess what? There is. Keep coming around. You'll find them. There is absolutely, I don't believe in wrong reasons for coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because my mom was going to be devastated when I killed myself, and the guy that I was trying to save me wanted me to get help, who ended up in, like, after the fact finding out he was married. But, like, thank God for him, you know, because, like, I wasn't going to get here for me. I couldn't have stayed for those reasons. There was work to be done. I had to stay here and do something and you know, find that within myself. And I don't even, I mean, within myself, like, deep down in my soul, like, something bigger than me, you know. I had to do that, but it was enough to get me in the door. And that being said, when they took me to that meeting, there was this guy speaking, and it was such a beautiful message. I hung on every single word. Like, I could just feel him healing me. And I have no idea what he said. I just know he was young, and he was cute, and he had tattoos. And that's who God chose. That's it, man. His will, not mine. But, you know, and thank God for that, because I was hooked, and I was so hooked that, like, when they asked who wanted to share, I put my hand up, and I realized, and I, like, shot it back down again, you know. But it was too late. I'd already gotten up for 24 hours or less. They're like, yeah, no, come on, you're next. I get that you're next nod, and I'm like, oh, God. So I got, like, time to prepare, and I told half the truth my whole life. I was a girl who walked around and just waved and pretended I was all right, right? So I'm like, I got this, and everything in me planned to get this, and something happened to me, and that's just not what happened. What happened is, my name is Rachel. I live in a alcohol house on Kensington Avenue. I can't stop getting drunk. I'm terrified to go home. People need to help me, like, tonight. Like, right now. And they rarely, man, those women in that meeting, the men stepped back, thank God. And those women, like, rallied around me, and they're telling me to pray, and they're praying, and they're telling me to make calls, and they're making calls, and nothing happens. Cause I got no money, I have a dirty urine, and I've been everywhere 30,000 times. And I wouldn't have taken me either. And thank God, man, when those girls drove me back, to my humble abode on Kensington Avenue, they said to each other when they drove away that they should have taken me, like, a detox or something. And I really, really, really believe. I know. I don't believe. I know that if they had, you would have someone else speaking tonight. I'm sure I know I'm very fast, so if you can't keep up with me, I'm sure there's someone who's like, God, I wish I was. But that would mean that I was dying in alcoholic death, so I'm glad they're not, you know? But that's what it always was, man. Like, I come in, I follow the rules, like, I'm a nice girl, you let me in, you give me a chance, you give me a 17 chance, and I got me out the door. You don't have to waste a drug screen on me, because I'm gone. I never come back until, like, 2 weeks later, you know? And that's not what happened. I went in there, and they were drinking, and I could hear it and smell it, and I just got on my knees because they told me to, and I knew there was something. I knew there was something bigger than me, because here's the thing, as I would come in and kneel, the people that I would meet would still be here. You know, people like Shane Dave would still be here, still doing the things, still helping people, still happy, still not ripping their freaking faces off, you know, and I knew that there was something happening that was bigger than a human failure. I was just afraid. I felt like I was a fraud because I could come in and out so many times. So I felt like I was quite sure. I knew that I was quite sure that he wouldn't, you know, give mercy to me. And, I found out a very important thing that I don't know a goddamn thing at all. Still don't. Second, I think I know something. There's not, something bad's gonna happen. Guess I wasn't supposed to say that, whatever that was. Cause that just completely went from my brain. So yeah, man, I got on my knees and I prayed, and I laid in bed and I prayed whether I thought it was going to work or not. I know what I was going to say. And I was given a gift that night. And it didn't matter if I'd been here before, and it didn't matter that I'd done so many bad, rotten things to myself and everyone in my life. Cause that's the thing about mercy. You know, it's not grace. I'm sorry. It's an undeserved gift. And I woke up the next day and I had 2 days sober in a crack alcohol house on Kensington Avenue. And, I stayed there most of that day. And they let me back to the recovery house, and I thought I had completely messed up really bad because I had just broken my brain, and it was bad, man. My jaw was like this for a couple months. I would say like half sentences, and then I would just like stop, and you'd be like waiting for me to finish, and I'd be like, it was like my brain was like a computer, and I had to wait for it to restart, and I didn't realize I was being given another gift because I couldn't be that smart girl who thinks my way out and thinks that's not what the big book says, and I literally couldn't do anything at a very, very simple base level other than what I was told. And this woman sat down with me, and she could have been talking about rainbows and unicorns or like Biggie Smalls lyrics. I don't know. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. But she sat down with me with this book, and she told me what had been told to her, and she told me in her story, and it really touched me because I knew her, and I'd been to recovery house with her a couple times, and she was out of her mind, and I was out of my mind. And when I sat down, the woman who sat across from me was very different. There was something different in her eyes, and I felt it, and she told me my story, and I just believed her, you know, because she was talking about her, and I knew it wasn't bullshit, and I just did what she told me to do. And it was like I would go into these, like, blackouts, and I came out of the blackout, and I'm sitting down in the intake room, and we're going through steps, and it's me, and I'm taking another girl through 1, 2, and 3, and I watched the light come on in her eyes in that moment, and I'm a couple months in, and my jaw probably hasn't stopped moving, and that was the exact moment that I realized that something had happened to me. Been like a really grateful place lately, but I don't think I've ever spoken without crying, so let me not try and like BS you, but and here's what I also want to say about that if you're at the point where it's your time to take others through steps, or your sponsor's telling you to, you know, get back, or whatever, it'll be an A thief, like, don't, but or do, whatever your experience, but your path. If you're feeling like you're unqualified and you don't know what you're doing, like, awesome. You're not qualified and you have absolutely no idea what you're doing. But that's good, because then maybe you'll ask something bigger than you to come in and help you. Because here's the thing, when I sat down with that woman and took her through the 12 steps, I know for a fact, I had like a couple months sober, my jaw was still like this, and I know I gave her like at least 83% complete wrong information. But it just doesn't matter. She was willing, I was willing, we sat down. Maybe it was better. I was a blank slate. Less of my ideas to come in. Do you know what I mean? Because I really, really believe, like, someone who was one of the women who's helped me along the way always says, like, use words only when necessary. And that's it, man. Because maybe that's it. Maybe maybe that's why it worked, because I wasn't able to talk and his feelings just came through, you know? And I haven't stopped since, but whatevs. And I got sober a little late in the hour, so like I don't have much time to go through steps, but here's the thing. I wouldn't have done it anyway. I don't believe that there's anything that I could say to like put this stuff into words that would do it justice. It's something you have to experience. Also, I don't really want to specifically tell you what I did, what step by step by step, because it's more ammo for you to like compare, like maybe I'm doing it wrong, maybe I'm... just do it. That's it. Or don't. Your path. But I don't know, man, like I think it's over and like life like was great, you know? Life is great. Life was actually great. I gotta actually say that at 90 days, when I had 90 days sober, I think I've been feeling like really free for a while now, like the past like year or so, but I don't, in that recovery house, like I hadn't had 90 days in like 9 years, and the girls like got me stuff. They had like Dunkin' Donuts, like it was a whole thing, and I was terrified because I would get so close and then I would just, you know, go back out. And when I had 90 days sober this time, like I cried for like a week straight. Like I just couldn't wrap my brain around it. And real quick, I want to end with like one of my men's stories. So I was told in the beginning, I told you how I'd come in, I'd chase like 5, 6, 9. Like I was told like Rachel Billows, do not make amends. Do not make amends because it's causing more harm. And just at first, because I was taken right through. So like they had me make like a couple that, you know, I had never made before, and the rest I was told to wait. And so I didn't make amends to my dad for a while. And my mom, like, I would get a couple days sober, and she'd be like, I knew you could do it. And I'd be like, out the door a week later. And my dad, when I would finally pick up each time, he'd be like, I knew you'd pick up, I just thought it would take longer, you know. And when I had to be about 6 months sober, I sat down with my dad, and I made amends to him, and I thanked him, you know, for being the great father that he was. And he cried, and I cried, and he told me he was proud of me, and he hadn't said that in so long. And it wasn't that he was a bad guy or not a loving guy or anything like that. I just hadn't done anything to make him proud, you know. And my dad used to think you guys were a cult. And he, like, it went from like, yeah, that's a cult, to, maybe you should go, like, then to like, in the end, it was like, what, call your sponsor, like, what's happening, you know. And then this time, like, he got real excited about AA, and we were counting down to my year, and he was like, so excited, and I got the year, and then it was like, everything after that, and he was like, every time he called me, he'd be like, is it 18 months yet? 18 months? Not yet, not yet. And, the day we buried my dad was the day that I had 18 months sober. And, this is gonna sound kind of weird to you, maybe not if it's something you've lived through, but it was like one of the bigger gifts you guys have given me. The day my dad passed, but my dad was sick for a very long time, so I was immediately very sad for myself. But like, this was like a new experience too, that like I was instantly like glad that he was at peace. So it was like my very first experience with, on a large scale, not my first thought, not being super selfish, which is interesting and awesome, but doesn't happen often. But you know, I thought every thought that I think I've ever thought that day, like every thought I could imagine came to mind. But it didn't occur to me. My best friend, who was the same girl that actually picked me up at the corner of Kensington Tioga and took me to that meeting. But she drove right over to my mom's house in Jersey. She spent the day with me doing, you know, I went to the, you know, I was able to step up. I was able to step up because of you people, and like bring something to the table, and take care of the funeral arrangements and like the things that like I should have been doing all that time, but it doesn't matter because I was doing it now, you know. I was making things right, and because of you guys. And we drove back, and at the time I was in a sober house, in between Jasper and Kensington on Westmoreland, and, not the greatest neighborhood, you know, and, it occurred to me that all the thoughts I thought, and like, getting drunk wasn't one of them. It had literally nothing to do with me, and, you know, just everything after that. Like, I have a 3-year-old daughter, and she has absolutely no idea. No idea. And like, the cool thing is, like, God willing, like, if I show up tomorrow and show up the next, you know, just showing up one day at a time and doing this stuff, she doesn't have to, you know? And, like, I'm wrapping it up now, but, like, I have home and I have a job and I just got a promotion and I have a car and a driver's license. I go on vacations. I've been to Europe. And like, I share those things with you, not like these are the things I have, because I don't consider them things. I consider them goddamn miracles. Like, there's absolutely nothing in my story that tells me that like these should be gifts that I should have. But here the F we are, you know, here we are. And they exist, and they're blessings. And my life never stops blowing my mind. It literally never stops blowing my mind. And I really honestly, like, I was thinking about it when I was driving here today, that I just can't wrap my brain around it. And I hope I never can, you know? God, I hope I never can. I hope it never, my prayer is that, like, I just keep showing up and, like, have a willingness to do this stuff so that it never stops blowing my mind. Because my fear is that, like, when it stops blowing my mind, I'll stop feeling the need to show up and be a service to you. You know, like, I will never be able to repay what you guys did for me, ever. But I hope that I always feel the desire I feel today to, like, try my damnedest to do so, you know. So, yeah, if you're here and it's your first time, like, you actually do never have to feel that way again, this way again. Like, it's, like, one of those cliche things, but, like, I guess they're cliches for a reason because it's the truth, right? And if you're here and it's your 13th time, like, that's okay. I'm really glad you're back. And if it's here, you're here and it's your 87th time and everyone's starting to give up on you and you're giving up on yourself and people in AA, place where no one's supposed to give up on you, for all human beings, like, that they even are, and, like, it's just broken, you got nothing left, like, you're me, man, like, and I love you, and I'm so excited, because it's about to be, like, an awesome wild ride, man, and here's the thing, like, if you're here, and you're feeling in, like, a really dark place, like, I am, like, a huge fan, advocate of dark places. I'm a last stop girl. I got sober in an alcohol house on Kensington Avenue. I don't recommend it, but I also don't not recommend it. Because here's the thing about like really dark places. Like, I pull like a lighter or light a candle. Like, I light a candle right here. And like, oh, it's pretty, oh, does it, like, what scent is it? You know, whatever. But like, say like all the lights go out and we light a candle. Like, I mean, like a black ale, like statewide black ale, and I light this candle in it, and it's beautiful, and it's bright, and it feels like hope. And that's what happened. That's what happened when a woman took my hand, walked me through the 12 steps to Alcoholics Anonymous, just the girl with the book, because someone else sat down and did it with her, took my hand, put it in God's hand, and then just kept walking with me and said, oh yeah, you also turn around and do it for someone else. That's what happened. And I don't know, man, like, that's it. I'm at my time. And if there's anything I can do to be of service, please let me know. Thank you so much, guys. Love you, Shay.